Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are closing in on the end of Sports Talk here. I'm Jeff Nowak. I'll bring you up till 7 p.m. Then we'll hand off to the Brian Kelly Show. Tulane is also taking on Southeastern Louisiana tonight. You can catch that on ESPN Plus. So that'll be a good thing to turn on the second I walk out of here. But I figured we could spend some time talking about the Saints to close out the show. I think we're pretty close to the roster that we're going to see going into the regular season. I think there's still a move or two left to make. I would be stunned if, you know, they did add Austin Deculus. I think you're going to see at least one more move at the offensive line position. I don't know if I've ever seen the Saints go into a game week with only eight offensive linemen on
it's the pretty crazy
53-man roster.
And specifically on the interior is what you were talking about, Jeff, like kind of a swing guy that can play a couple different positions, just because you got question marks there. Like Saldivari made the original 53-man roster, but I mean, he hasn't practiced since he suffered that calf injury still, right?
My question is, when do you, you know, if he's back, do you make him the starter? Because I don't know. I don't know if I've been particularly impressed with Lucas Patrick. He's a veteran, but you know, from what I've seen, and the question for me is, okay, who's your backup center? Because I'm not sure right now. You have a lot of guys who can play center, and that's what, when you look at that eight-man front here.
It's probably Lucas, right?
I guess.
Because Lucas has played center. I mean, you got Lemieux on the practice squad, but he obviously did not work out at center.
You know, the reason he's on the practice squad, in my opinion, is that he's only a guard backup.
Yeah, because he can't play center.
Exactly. Like, we found out in real time that center is really not an option for him. And so now what do you, like, if he, you need a guy that can play multiple positions, and I think you look at that offensive line group and you're like, okay, there's eight guys, but you technically could say you have a backup at each position, because we know Ole Udo can play right tackle and guard. We know Landon Young can play left tackle and guard, or at least we've seen him play it. You know, Cesar Ruiz could bump over to center if you needed him to, right? Yeah, you know, Nick Saldivari could play guard, and then you could have Lucas Patrick at center, but I don't like any of those options. I don't feel like any of them are developing into better players.
I think that's a good question, is who is the backup center right now? Is it Ruiz?
Do you bump him? I don't think they want it to be.
No, I think that they would probably prefer it to be probably Lucas Patrick, and then, I mean, you would hope that Saldivari would be able to play left guard and be healthy enough to play left guard, but it's a question. I mean,
Kyle Hergel's an answer too. It could be
Kyle on the practice squad right now. I'm happy he made it to the practice squad too. Kyle Hergel was a guy that, as you had mentioned throughout the preseason process, Jeff, was taking first team snaps at points just because of the injuries up front. And the fact that he got, you know, waived, you were hoping that he would make it to the practice squad, and he in fact did, which is a good sign, because I mean, I think that the Saints feel pretty good about him as an undrafted free agent.
You know, we talked, Steve Geller and I talked about this on Inside Black and Gold Today, the podcast, which you should check out. But I'm curious, Charlie, did you have any surprise cuts? Were there any players that were cut that you were like, wow, I didn't see that coming?
I mean, I guess initially like the Jonathan Abram thing, but Mike and I talked about that off air. We were texting, and he's just like, this is the same thing that happened last year. Similarly with like Ugo Amadi, I guess. But outside of that, I mean, the undrafted free agents like Jacob Cabote, I was really, you know, rooting for him. I'm happy that he's on the practice squad. Same thing with Kyle Hergel. You know, when they waived him, I was a little bit disappointed, but he made it to the practice squad too. So not necessarily. It wasn't too stunning, I would say. Like a couple of the shockers, I guess you would think, is that, you know, Mason Tipton, who just didn't see for multiple weeks.
But that was one of the few on my roster projection that I just got completely wrong.
Yeah, that was the surprising one. And for like those that were stunned by Rico Paton, the whole issue,
I had him on my I can't say I was surprised. He was literally on my roster projection, but I am happy for him for sure.
John Hendricks, I think, came on here basically a couple days before the initial 53 came out and said that the Saints don't think that if he gets like that he'll make it to the practice squad.
No, they
had to make sure that he was on the initial 53. And based off of how he played in the preseason and how he did throughout camp, I mean, he is one of those surprising stories. But he deserved it. He earned his spot, so that was really cool.
I was told that there were other teams calling his camp Tuesday morning trying to figure out if he was going to get cut so they could prepare a waiver claim.
Like, exactly.
Like, he was not getting through waivers. And, you know, I think, like, Shamar was a little upset. Shamar John Charles, in the sense of, like, I think that he had a great camp. And he was running with the ones, and he probably felt like, hey, I've done just as much, but I don't know if, you know, he did go unclaimed. He didn't even end up on the Saints practice squad, although there were some initial reports that he signed a practice squad deal. They actually put in a waiver claim on a different cornerback named Shamar, which I thought was amusing. But, you know, the surprise cuts, yeah, I agree. I don't think there were a ton of surprises. What surprised me wasn't so much that they cut any individual player. It was that they cut multiple individual players, right? Like, they cut Ugo Amadi and Jonathan Abram, whereas I thought one of them would be cut and the other one would stick around. Kyle Hergel and Shane Lemieux. I thought, like, on my projection, I had one of those two guys and then the other one on the practice squad. Instead, you have all four on the practice squad. And I think where I miscalculated was how much they wanted to keep their young draft picks. I didn't think Jalen Ford was going to make it. I thought maybe you'd stash him on IR. I still think you might.
Jalen Ford and Bub Means were both also slightly surprising names that they kept, yeah. But obviously they liked the guys that they drafted. Now, the one draft pick that they did cut was Josiah Isserim, the tackle that they were able to put on the practice squad. But all the other picks that they made on the initial 53.
Well, when I asked DA about this after the Titans game, right? And one of the things I wanted to know is, hey, when you draft a guy, does that kind of – you know, is it possible to separate the value and say, like, hey, this guy, he might not be showing as much right now, but we have the investment here versus, like, hey, these guys are on an even playing field and the UDFA is playing better, so we're going to keep the UDFA. And even at that point, you know, I expected him to kind of play it coy and say, like, oh, yeah, it's all about production. But he was like, yeah, tie goes to the runner, right? So if they're close, I'm keeping the guy we drafted. You know, and whether you agree with that is kind of, you know, irrespective of the fact that that's how they're going to operate. And so you look at a guy like Bub Means is a fifth-round pick. You want to keep him if you can, right? They scouted him. They drafted him for a reason. Same with Jalen Ford. Christian Boyd, I don't think you had that question about because he had a really strong camp. But, you know, it's tough. And you can't keep all your draft picks. Whenever you have that many late-round picks, you're going to have to make some tough decisions. And Josiah is a developmental guy.
Yes.
You know, he's a behemoth. You know, he didn't have a particularly strong finish to the preseason. But I don't know. It's a tough situation.
Jeff, wasn't it the Colts, I think, that cut like four draft picks that they made back in April for their initial 53? I think that was a report. I'll have to double check that. But, I mean, some teams, you know, if they don't see what they like from the draft picks, they still move on from them. Obviously, the Saints liked what they saw, especially in limited action, because Means and Ford, the reason why I think they were surprising, similar to Tipton, is because they dealt with injuries at camp. And you didn't get to see much of them, especially in preseason action. Jalen Ford, I don't think, played a game in the preseason. Did he?
I think he played against the 49ers. Maybe not.
I'm not sure if he did. I know that Bub Means got some preseason action.
Oh, you know what? No. I think he played against the Cardinals. I think he was
in that first
game. I'm pretty sure he got back for that game.
Gotcha.
I could be wrong, but he was back for a period of time. It wasn't a very long period of time, but he did get back.
But obviously, as you kind of mentioned, they liked the guys that they picked, especially kind of those when you had a first round pick, a second round pick, and then a gigantic gap before you had 3 5th round picks. I mean, you had Rattler, you had Means, you had Ford, right? But they liked all of them. So they're on the initial 53. And it's just that not every team will do that, right? Where they can acknowledge a mistake, so to speak, in a draft pick. And obviously the Saints don't think that they made mistakes with this draft. They liked the guys that they got in the building from the 2024 class, and they gave them that shot on the initial 53.
Yeah, to me it's tough because, like, you draft guys because in the fifth round because you think, hey, we can develop these guys. We see something, a developmental trait that we like, and quitting on them prior to their rookie season feels like we didn't even give them a chance to develop at all. So it's like, to me, you cut a guy, you cut a rookie, a draft pick, if A, the numbers make it impossible, which I think is the case with Josiah. Like, I just think you had to make tough decisions somewhere, and that's where you made one. But B, you cut a guy if he's not doing the work. And that's where I know a lot of people are frustrated with Foskey, and they feel like they haven't seen as much as they want to see from Foskey. But I think the difference when you're watching these preseason games versus you're involved in the entire process is there's so much more than just those three games that go into the preseason. And if you're a coach and you're a staff that sees a guy who's doing all the work, he's showing up to meetings early, he's working his butt off on the field, and it's not necessarily showing up in the games, you're not going to just cut a guy for a lack of production in year two in that circumstance just because, well, Nico Lalo seems to be having more success in the preseason games. You could disagree with that, and you could say it should all be about what's on the field, But again, if the coaches see a guy working, they're not going to hold that against him in that circumstance. You're going to give him a chance.
And real quick, back to that Colts comment that I made earlier, they selected 9 players back in the 2024 draft, and they cut 3 of them. So that's what it was. It wasn't 4, it was 3. And I mean, it was kind of late round.
What was the highest round pick?
5th.
5th rounder?
Fifth rounder.
See, like, it's rare to see a player cut that's day 2. Right? Like, you'll see day 3 guys.
Second, third round. Like, those are key building blocks of any roster. And that's why, you know, the Saints have missed on a couple of those picks. And that's why you have some question marks on different spots.
The highest round pick I can recall off the top of my head for a player who was cut before his rookie season was Rick Leonard, Florida State, 4th round pick.
Right.
Offensive
lineman.
There's been other players that got cut. But like Stanley Jean Baptiste is a good example. I think he was a 2nd round pick, but he got cut before year 2. But cutting a guy before his rookie season just means you are not impressed at all. And honestly, if you're doing that, it's a really poor reflection on the scouting because they're the guys who gave you that intel. Like, oh, this guy's a hard worker. We really like him. He fits our culture. And then 2 months later, you're like, get him out of here.
Yeah, especially early day 3 guys. I mean, day 2, as you kind of mentioned, 2nd and 3rd round, that is
a 7th round pick is basically a UDFA that you got
early. That you wanted to make sure that you secured.
Yeah, like who was the player, the kid out of Air Force a couple years ago? Jackson? Not Jermaine Jackson. DeMarco Jackson and the other one, Joseph. It's not coming to me. He was out of Air Force. He ended up going to Denver. But like they cut him and it's like, yeah, okay, it was a stretch. But all right, we're going to talk a good bit more about Saints. We got someone texting in about the backup quarterback. I do want to talk about that situation because I think it's amusing at the very minimum. We're also going to hear audio from Eric McCoy and John Ridgway, the new guy, coming up in the next segment. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Charlie Long. This is WWL. Stick around.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're coming back here on WWL. We're live on AMFM.com and the always for free Odyssey app. Check it out wherever you get your apps. And we're going to be talking more Saints. We got some text in here. One guy says, I guess I missed it, but who is going to back up Derek Carr? That's a good question, 2015, because I don't think we know yet. We asked Dennis Allen about it on Tuesday, and he basically said, you'll know when I know. It's still a competitive situation, and you know that irked a few people, especially you know the Rebel Alliance that seems to be forming on Saints Twitter to try to tip the scales here, trying to put their thumb on the scale for the Rattlesnake. I'm a fan of the Rattlesnake, but you know one thing that I think people take for granted is DA is never been a coach, and he never will be a coach that kind of hands things to rookies, and I think that kind of becomes apparent. Like, why do you think they traded for John Ridgway rather than saying, hey, we need someone to replace Colin Saunders early in the season? Why not just throw the rookie in there and see what happens? It's just not how he likes to operate, you know? And so I think it almost flies in the face of his ideal of what a coach should do to just say, yeah, it's the rookie's job. He's earned it, you know? Like, there's a reason that he calls Kool-Aid McKinstry JaQuincy. And not even his mother calls him JaQuincy, right? Like, I think that is very much a vibe that he believes in. I think that's, you know, that probably comes from Sean Payton. Sean Payton was never a guy that handed anything to rookies either. But I do think that's part of it. And for more, you know, from John Ridgway, they traded for John from the Commanders. They sent their 2025 sixth rounder to Washington in exchange for a 2025 seventh rounder from Washington. So, in other words, you basically got him for nothing.
I love those trades. They're so funny.
Well, because the team trading him wants to feel like they got something.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about a sixth rounder versus seventh rounder, it's usually a player that like only you're interested in anyway.
You're making sure that you can get someone that doesn't have to process through different claims and stuff like
that. It's just so you can say, well, we didn't just cut him. We got something.
Yeah, you got a seventh round pick.
And it's funny because in a lot of instances, you probably would have got the same player because at that point, it's like only you're scouting this guy anyway. But, you know, the Saints got their guy. And so let's hear from John. He talked to reporters in the locker room today.
So were you a little surprised when you got the news that you had gotten traded, or what was kind of your reaction?
I was kind of just waiting for it to happen, honestly, just because I knew my outcome, and kind of knew what was going on with the team, and talking with my agent. It was just a matter of fact when, and it happened yesterday at 4 o'clock. So glad to be here now.
When did the Saints get on your radar? Like, did you know early on that they were one of the teams interested in you, or?
I had no idea. I tried to keep it to where my agent didn't really tell me much, just because I wanted to stay focused on preseason. But I mean, I'm glad to be here. You know, it's a nice organization to play for.
I think like Washington, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn kind of indicated that this would be a better scheme for you. Do you feel like that's the case, or how do you?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Just the way they play, and the D-line coach, and the style they teach, and I'm excited to get to learn the playbook and get to play along the guys on the D-line.
There are a couple guys here that you know, Kalik and Chase.
Yeah,
to be reunited.
It was pretty nice just to see some faces I already recognized, you know, in a new spot. So being able to have them to count on to where, you know, if I'm not, you know, feeling my way around town good enough or feeling around the facility, I can lean on them when I need it.
Plan to suplex any guys while you're here?
I don't think the D-line will cover the fines for that, but I mean, if it happens, it happens. But I think my pockets are a little deeper now since my rookie year, so.
What? Kind of general question. What can you bring to this defense?
Definitely like a blue-collar mentality. Like, I'm going to bring my hard hat and lunch pail every day to work. So that's what I plan on bringing. It's just a good mindset and good attitude to attack the day. And whatever happens, happens. I can live with it.
Cover it yet from the up-downs?
Yeah, man, 40? Oh, they were telling me that, and I was like, this dude must be lying, like, you know, pulling my chain a little bit, but no, he was real about it, but it was definitely nice seeing I had the team around me supporting me, so that was nice about it. They just leave me over there to suffer, so it was cool to have the camaraderie around, you know, versus just a new guy coming in, I'll just make him do 40 burpees real quick, so it was cool.
Did you know that coming in?
No, I had no idea. They put an old picture of me in college up and said XL. It was like 10 minus 50, and you got 40 burpees. I was like, man, I don't know how I'm going to recover from that. But I ended up getting back. My leg's back, so that's good.
What like, when did you start to fill it around? Like, what number?
You know? Oh, as soon as it got to about 23, 27, I was like, I got about 13, 17 more. Like, come on. It was really getting bad when the spit starts coming out, you know? It's like, but no, it wasn't bad. Like I said, I was happy I had the guys around me. So it was cool. Cool experience. I definitely don't look forward to doing it again next year, but it was a good experience.
I don't know what he's talking about. I just did 40 up-downs while he was talking.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not even breathing heavy.
No, I can confirm.
Yeah. You watched the whole thing?
Yes, in 3 minutes.
That's a lie. I'm lying to you. I did not do that, and I will not do that.
No.
But no, have you seen the clip of
where he like picks up the
like it's
the
not
running
an exaggeration.
Back.
He full suplexes.
Was that against
the guy.
The Texans?
It was the Texans.
Yeah, I saw that clip where he literally picks up the running back, and I mean, suplex is a strong word, but that's what he does.
An apt description of what happened, and I don't know why he chose to do that.
And the running back ran right into him too.
Yeah,
like, he was on a block.
The running back was basically like, okay, take me. Like, I'm done. And John was like, you know what? I'm going to make him remember this day. I'm going to make sure there's a clip that I can point to. I'm sure and he mentioned he got fined for that. That's a penalty. You can't do that. That's
understandable.
You're allowed to tackle somebody. You're not allowed to take their soul at the same time. But, you know, I think that he, you know, whenever you can add a guy for basically nothing, obviously you're paying him, but in terms of like, You're able to add a player that has 32 games of experience in the NFL. Like, he's played a good bit, and this late in the game, you know, I think that's a solid addition, and we'll see how it goes. You know, he's a physical guy. He's a guy who can line up there and move some people, can take on a double team. I think it's a good I can't recall who asked the question, but yeah, he has played with Kalik Hudson, who's on the practice squad, and Chase Young, who is on the defensive line. So he has some familiarity with that group.
Yeah, former guy out of, well, Illinois State was where he started, but he transferred to Arkansas, then spent time with the Dallas Cowboys after being drafted in the fifth round in 2022, and then spent the last 2 years with the Washington Commanders before getting traded to the Saints. So And I mean, the trade, as we mentioned before we even got into the audio, it was nothing.
When was he at Illinois State? Do you have that in front of you?
Yeah, he was at – when was he at Illinois State?
Yeah.
2017 through 2020.
Oh, you know what? Colin, I thought maybe Colin Saunders and he crossed paths, but Colin is the Western Illinois.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which so, it's got to be. The Illinois State's the Redbirds?
Yes.
There's got to be some. I think there's someone on the Saints from Illinois State. I'll have to double check that. But, no, and I mean, that's the – you know, it's funny. If you had asked me to bet money on any position the Saints would add a piece at the after the draft, I would not have bet defensive tackle.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Christian Boyd was someone I think that we were all – kind of high on as far as a draft pick, but with the trade that they made, just kind of reviewing it, what happened yesterday, Commanders trading John Ridgeway and a 7th-round pick in exchange for a 6th-round pick. So you swap a 6th for a 7th, and then you get a defensive tackle that you really like, obviously, and a guy that has, you know, as of 2023, total tackles 55, a forced fumble, a couple pass deflections too, as a big defensive tackle. He's got size too, Jeff, 6'5". 321.
He's a big dude.
Like, yeah. you put him next to Brian Bercy on the defensive tackle spot, like, week one with Bryce Young, who's not a big dude, having to see over those two guys in the middle, it's going to be kind of tough, I think.
Oh, you know what? I think it's Joe Woods.
That's what it was, because, no, Mike had brought that up on draft night.
Yes, because I think, and this is funny, that's the only reason I know, is because Deuce asked him about Grambling. And he was like, I didn't go to Grambling. I went to Illinois State.
Oh, it was Deuce that had asked it. Okay.
Yes. I think Haas might have asked it, too. It was a conversation. But, yeah. They didn't cross paths at Illinois State because Joe Woods played there in 1988.
Yeah, quite some time ago.
But there is a connection. Joe Woods, the defensive coordinator, went to the same college. There we go. We figured it out. I knew there was an Illinois State.
I mean, there. I think that is kind of funny, though, because you're adding another gigantic defensive tackle, which now you have – two of them in that room as far as guys that are 6'5".
6'5 dudes who...
On the interior.
Yeah, yeah.
It could wreak some havoc.
You know, and just to kind of bridge off that, I did have a segue there and I failed to take it, but, you know, the position I would have bet money that they added pieces at was offensive line, and, you know, one of the interesting subplots of this season is Eric McCoy is now the unquestioned leader in that offensive line room. You know, last year, I think it's tough to be the leader of an offensive line room when you're not necessarily the elder statesman of it, right? And last year you had Andres Pete and Ryan Ramczyk, both of whom had been there quite a while longer.
Yeah, now Eric is the old guy
by
up
far.
Front.
It's not even that close.
I mean, Caesar was a little bit after.
Caesar was 2020.
Yeah, and McCoy was 2019.
Was he the next year? I guess he was. I always lose track of the amount of time that passed from 2019 to 2021 because COVID was there.
Understandably so. Yeah,
it feels like an eternity.
But as far as, like, you know, the skins on the wall that Bobby always likes to talk about, it's Eric McCoy.
And it's also because Eric was this day one starter at center, so it kind of felt like 2019 was his third season, even though it was his rookie season, but he's just been so good from day one. But let's hear Eric. He talked in the locker room today as well. I believe we have that queued up.
There's been obviously a revamp of the offensive line. Three new offensive linemen, along with yourself and Cesar Ruiz. But you guys understand this, and you are now the veteran of the line. Just what has that process been like?
Well, first, I'm going to say that I will only be able to answer this question if we refer to him as Cesar McCoy from now on. That's the first. First things first. I need it to be in the interview. Cesar McCoy.
He will always be Cesar McCoy.
Cesar McCoy now. But yeah, I think we have a ton of talent. I think it all comes on execution. I think Tali. You know, first round pick, what, pick 14? Mm-hmm. Transitioning sides, I think he's super talented. He's coming in and he's worked this camp. He missed a few days with, you know, whatever he had going on. But I think he's a ball player, and I really believe that he'll have a great rookie year. And I'm excited to see what this year, his first real game, what that looks like, because I think that he can be a really good player for this team for a long time. Who's our newest starter? Lucas. Lucas, veteran, savvy guy, knows a lot, has been in this system before. So even things where I haven't known all the answers, he's there to even help me out. Because he's been in this for a couple years and he's done it. So I'm excited to be playing next to him because he's super intelligent. Who's our newest starter?
Trev.
Oh. Trevor, once again, transitioning sides are in a new position. I think that he's made strides over the past couple of years. And, I'm hoping this is going to be a good year for him.
You know, it can be a fluid situation on the offensive line. We've seen that in the past where, you know, guys get injured and those kinds of things. But there's rarely been a time where you started the season with three new starters. How unsettling is that, if it's unsettling at all?
Yeah. First off, your breath smells really good. I'm sorry, it's right in my face. But I would say that I'm not unsettled. I try not to be unsettled in any situation, in fact. I mean, it'll be different, but I believe in all of the guys that we have, and I believe in the talent that we have in the room, and I believe in the offensive system to put us in the best place possible to go out there and execute and to ultimately be a really good offensive line.
How is it being the bedrock of this offensive line? Because you're the guy who's the veteran. You've been here the longest, and you're the longest tenured, and you're obviously you're the guy that they're looking at and counting on.
Yeah, I mean, it's all part of the job. You know, I know that these guys rely on me. I know that I am the old guy in the room and that I have a standard that I set for myself. And, you know, I expect them to hold me to that standard if I'm not living up to it. But, yeah, it is what it is. It's part of the job. And I am excited for it. I'm excited to kind of sit in the leadership role the second year in a row. I think it's given me an opportunity to – it has given me an opportunity to grow and really challenge myself to be more vocal, to be more – demanding of the people around me.
Yeah. Now, you say they hold you to a standard. Obviously, you hold them to the standard, mm-hmm, too. Mm-hmm. How do you go about that? Are you kind of a chastiser? Are you a guy who, a cheerleader? Or, you know, how do you get guys to perform the way you want them to?
Yeah, I think it all depends on the guy and depends on the time. You know, some guys do better with encouragement. I don't want to say cheerleading, but encouragement. Some guys do better with when you get on there. That's just the reality of it. Like, if you ever see me and C's going back and forth, like, we'd be yelling at each other because, like, that's kind of how we communicate the best. I know it sounds dumb, but, like, he knows I'm serious and I'm sorry yelling. I know he's serious, but he starts yelling. But a guy like Tali, rookie, you want to build him up. You want to encourage him. I think it just depends on the guy, and I think it depends on the moment.
Sorry, what did Eric say? I stopped listening after he complimented John DeSage's breath.
Yeah, that was interesting. No, I mean, a lot of talk about the offensive line and the starting guys in that room. Yeah. And right now, if you're looking at it, as he mentioned, Taliese Fuaga, super high ceiling as a rookie prospect, a guy that we all have very high expectations for entering his first year with the black and gold at left tackle. And then left guard, you have Lucas Patrick. He's obviously the quote-unquote bedrock of the Saints offensive line at center. And then right guard right now, Cesar Ruiz. But going back to what we talked about, who's the backup center? Could be Cesar. It could be Lucas.
Either way, he's still the right guard.
No, and I understand that.
Cesar McCoy?
Yeah, Cesar McCoy. And then at right tackle, you have Trevor. So, I mean, that's still an interesting question. Yeah, for now. A couple depth pieces, like, as you mentioned, Landon Young on the left side and Oliudo on the right side. But who's the backup center?
The funny thing is, to me, the nightmare scenario for this season is not even Trevor Penning is unplayable. It's that Tali struggles. Because the thing is, Trevor, or whoever, and Oli's going to struggle on the right side too if you have to start Oli. You're just not in a great scenario there. But you can help them. You can help one side. You can throw a tight end over there. You can chip with a running back. You can't hide two struggling tackles.
No.
And so, like, you're banking a lot on Tali being solid from day one. And if he's not, then they are in dire straits. Like, not just like, this is going to be a struggle. They will not have offense. It will be a disaster.
Derek Carr is going to be in trouble.
Right. You'll be better off starting Spencer Rattler just because at least I've watched him run around behind what basically was a non-existent offensive line at South Carolina. He has some experience with it.
Yeah. Well, that was a note that I think Nick Underhill, New Orleans Stuff Football, had put this out when Matt Judon ended up going with the Falcons.
Yeah.
And so the first 4 weeks for the Saints, a lot of the premier edge rushers are actually on the right side that will be attacking Trevor Penning. And so you're going to need to help Trevor at points with some of those guys that he's going to be going up against, where you're probably going to see Jadeveon Clowney coming off that side for the Carolina Panthers.
South Carolina.
You're probably going to be seeing Micah Parsons coming off that side for the Dallas Cowboys. This is just the first 4 weeks, by the way.
Yep.
You're probably going to see Brandon Graham coming off the right side for the Eagles. And then finally with the Falcons, Matt Judon. It's a lot of premium pass rushers that you're going to see in those first 4 weeks coming off the right side of the line. So Taliese Fuaga, you know, once again, super high expectations for him. They're probably not going to be giving him that much help early on, Jeff.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't think they can.
No, and, I don't think so either.
So like, hopefully he delivers on that promise. But all right, we're going to be taking a break here. Again, I'm Jeff Nowak. He is Charlie Long. We're taking you up till 7 p.m. Then we'll hand off to the Brian Kelly Show, Tulane, also taking on Southeastern Louisiana, coming up at 7 p.m. tonight on ESPN+. Plus, this is WWL. Stick around. I agree. You should check out that Inside Black and Gold podcast. It's a good time. What's also a good time is seeing at least one NFL team not throwing their quarterback to the wolves. And that, I will say, is Drake May and the Patriots. Now,
I thought about you when I saw that.
Because I am very, very much, and I've been this way for a long time, if you have the opportunity to have your rookie quarterback, I do not care when he was drafted, sit for any period of time, you are doing that quarterback a favor. You are not ever helping your rookie quarterback by throwing them into the fire in week one. And, you know, it's funny because I tweeted this morning, and it's like, I hadn't looked it up yet, but I could tell you just from anecdotal understanding that the hit rate for quarterbacks who sit and wait is going to be higher in the first round than quarterbacks who you throw in week one. Now, a lot of times you don't have a choice, right? When you're the number one overall pick and you're a coach who isn't necessarily in year one, right? You don't really have an option. Matt Eberflus, if he decided, hey, we're going to sit Caleb Williams, they just fire him and throw someone in there who would start Caleb Williams. He doesn't have a choice. He's got to start Caleb Williams. Now, Dan Quinn and the Commanders, they don't have to start Jaden Daniels week one. He's doing it because he wants to. Sean Payton doesn't have to start Bo Nix week one. He's doing it because he wants to. And so someone asked, like, okay, have you actually looked this up? And so I decided to look it up, right? And so this morning I went through and I listed every single quarterback who was in the first round, and I cross-referenced when was their first start, or at least the first time they were the starter for multiple games, right? Like, sometimes you'll see guys with like a spot start in like week 7, but then they don't start again until like week 14, and I don't count that because they weren't the starter. And so I found 18 examples of first round picks who, dating back to 2000, did not become the starter for their team until week 10 or later in their rookie season, which I think is like, and I use week 10 because like Eli Manning is kind of my example that I look back to it because he was the number one overall pick. And for the Giants to not start him until week 10 took some cojones, right? They were like, we're going to go with Kurt Warner until this bus drives off a cliff and then we'll hand Eli the keys. But I think that's smart. I think getting your rookie quarterback a chance in that season after it's over, basically, with not as much pressure so he can learn, I think is good. And that season, you know, I think they lost the next 5 games. Then they won the finale against the Cowboys, and everyone was like, this was great. This was a success. Went on to win 2 Super Bowls, probably a Hall of Famer. But that list of quarterbacks, 18. There's 10 quarterbacks on this list who I would say are success stories. There are a few others, like Rex Grossman's on that list. He went to a Super Bowl. I'd still call that a failure. But Rex Grossman is a guy who did not start until then, but is not on this list. So this list includes Chad Pennington. He didn't start till year 3, week 5. Michael Vick, year 2, week 1. Phillip Rivers, year 3, week 1. Eli Manning, week 10 of his rookie season. Aaron Rodgers, week 1 of his fourth season. Jay Cutler, week 12 of his rookie season. Jared Goff, week 10 of his rookie season. Pat Mahomes, week 16 of his rookie season, technically. He didn't really become the starter until the next season. So you could say year 2, but his first start was week 16 of his rookie season. Lamar Jackson, week 10 of his rookie season. Jordan Love, week 1 of year 3. So that's a 55% hit rate on quarterbacks that were taken in the first round dating back to 2000 who did not start until week 10. Now, there's obviously misses on that list, too. Jamarcus Russell's on that list.
Yeah.
But you can't rescue a terrible like, there's certain picks that are just bad. Like, you could give them 10 years, and they would still not be a viable starting quarterback. But I will tell you right now, the hit rate of first-round quarterbacks is a lot lower than 55%.
Correct.
So, I think that argument holds water.
I would agree. And this quarterback class, I think, really does have a chance to be special. Yeah. You think of some QB classes in recent years, and I mean, the Kenny Pickett class was an example of how terrible one could be, but one that was hyped, like the Trevor Lawrence class, that one didn't work out at all.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're looking at that a few years later. I think, what was that, the 2021 class?
The Tua and Herbert?
No. The Lawrence one where it was Trevor Lawrence and like Zach Wilson and Mac Jones, like that class, like that just didn't work out really at all.
Yeah, you're right.
But like this year's class, to your point, as you mentioned, Caleb Williams is starting week one. Jaden Daniels is starting week one. The number one and two overall pick, respectively. Number three pick, Drake May, is sitting behind Jacoby Brissett.
Yep.
And I think that's why you have Jacoby Brissett there in the first place.
You need a sacrificial lamb.
And that's exactly what he is. Is because you have a veteran in place that can, you know, lead an offense, but obviously not at a very high level. And the Patriots have issues offensively.
Yeah, like especially all over the place. If you're a team that does not see yourself as like a legitimate playoff contender right now, which, you know, when you drafted number two over in the draft or number three in the draft, you shouldn't. The Commanders shouldn't see themselves as a playoff contender right now.
No.
Figure everything else out first.
Michael Penix is a backup starting as the number 8th overall
pick.
And
I don't give
Atlanta.
Them credit, though, because they just are in a situation where they have to start Kirk Cousins.
I'm just reviewing what happened with the top 12 picks. Right. J.J. McCarthy starting the season on injured reserve. Right. And then Bo Nix is starting for the Broncos against Seattle. So you're going to have three guys out of those six start week one. And we'll see what happens. But as far as the other guys, you're going to have two that start out as backups and then one start on the injured reserve.
Yeah, I mean, that's not to say, like, starting guys week one, suddenly, like, that you don't give them, like, they don't have a chance to succeed. There are obviously examples of quarterbacks who started week one of their rookie season and have had a lot of success. But
I think
you're not doing them any favors.
I agree with you 100% that I think that the Patriots are doing Drake May a favor by sending him. And I said this with Mike. I think that, you know, as far as prospects, if you're looking at these guys like Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels won Heismans and, you know, you feel good about them potentially coming in and starting week one, Drake May is a little bit more raw. Like, he's got plenty of potential and plenty of arm talent, but let him sit and don't just throw him out there behind that bad offensive line without any weapons on that Patriots offense and watch him suffer, lose his confidence early on. It just becomes a snowball effect, and then it ends up being that a wasted third overall pick. So, yeah, I think they're doing him a favor.
You're asking guys to take an exam without ever taking the class, and I don't know if you've ever tried to do that. Not going to go well. But all right, one more break, and then we'll be closing it out here on Sports Talk. Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, taking you up till 7 p.m. Stick around. All right, closing it out here on WWL. Jeff Nowak filling in for Steve Geller. I want to thank everyone who makes this broadcast possible. Diane Newman, Dan Barron, Ian Hoke, Charlie Long behind the glass. We're going to be throwing it to the first edition of the Brian Kelly Show, getting ready for LSU football season. I'll be back here tomorrow night hosting Sports Talk with Steve Geller, 4 to 8 p.m. Who dat? Let's go. I agree. You should check out that Inside Black and Gold podcast. It's a good time. What's also a good time is seeing at least one NFL team not throwing their quarterback to the Wolves. And that, I will say, is Drake May and the Patriots. Now,
I thought about you when I saw that.
Because I am very, very much, and I've been this way for a long time, if you have the opportunity to have your rookie quarterback, I do not care when he was drafted, sit for any period of time, you are doing that quarterback a favor. You are not ever helping your rookie quarterback by throwing them into the fire in week one. And, you know, it's funny because I tweeted this morning, and it's like, I hadn't looked it up yet, but I could tell you just from anecdotal understanding that the hit rate for quarterbacks who sit and wait is going to be higher in the first round than quarterbacks who you throw in week one. Now, a lot of times you don't have a choice, right? When you're the number one overall pick and you're a coach who isn't necessarily in year one, right? You don't really have an option. Matt Eberflus, if he decided, hey, we're going to sit Caleb Williams, they just fire him and throw someone in there who would start Caleb Williams. He doesn't have a choice. He's got to start Caleb Williams. Now, Dan Quinn and the Commanders, they don't have to start Jaden Daniels week one. He's doing it because he wants to. Sean Payton doesn't have to start Bo Nix week one. He's doing it because he wants to. And so someone asked, like, okay, have you actually looked this up? And so I decided to look it up, right? And so this morning I went through and I listed every single quarterback who was in the first round, and I cross-referenced when was their first start, or at least the first time they were the starter for multiple games, right? Like, sometimes you'll see guys with like a spot start in like week 7, but then they don't start again until like week 14, and I don't count that because they weren't the starter. And so I found 18 examples of first round picks who, dating back to 2000, did not become the starter for their team until week 10 or later in their rookie season, which I think is like, and I use week 10 because like Eli Manning is kind of my example that I look back to it because he was the number one overall pick. And for the Giants to not start him until week 10 took some cojones, right? They were like, we're going to go with Kurt Warner until this bus drives off a cliff and then we'll hand Eli the keys. But I think that's smart. I think getting your rookie quarterback a chance in that season after it's over, basically, with not as much pressure so he can learn, I think is good. and that season, you know, I think they lost the next five games. Then they won the finale against the Cowboys, and everyone was like, this was great. This was a success. Went on to win two Super Bowls, probably a Hall of Famer. But that list of quarterbacks, 18. There's 10 quarterbacks on this list who I would say are success stories. There are a few others, like Rex Grossman's on that list. He went to a Super Bowl. I'd still call that a failure, but Rex Grossman is a guy who did not start until then, but is not on this list. So this list includes Chad Pennington. He didn't start till year 3, week 5. Michael Vick, year 2, week 1. Phillip Rivers, year 3, week 1. Eli Manning, week 10 of his rookie season. Aaron Rodgers, week 1 of his fourth season. Jay Cutler, week 12 of his rookie season. Jared Goff, week 10 of his rookie season. Pat Mahomes, week 16 of his rookie season, technically. He didn't really become the starter until the next season. So you could say year 2, but his first start was week 16 of his rookie season. Lamar Jackson, week 10 of his rookie season. Jordan Love, week 1 of year 3. So that's a 55% hit rate on quarterbacks that were taken in the first round dating back to 2000 who did not start until week 10. Now, there's obviously misses on that list, too. Jamarcus Russell's on that list.
Yeah.
But you can't rescue a terrible like, there's certain picks that are just bad. Like, you could give them 10 years, and they would still not be a viable starting quarterback. But I will tell you right now, the hit rate of first-round quarterbacks is a lot lower than 55%.
Correct.
So, I think that argument holds water.
I would agree. And this quarterback class, I think, really does have a chance to be special. Yeah. You think of some QB classes in recent years, and I mean, the Kenny Pickett class was an example of how terrible one could be, but one that was hyped, like the Trevor Lawrence class, that one didn't work out at all.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're looking at that a few years later. I think, what was that, the 2021 class?
The Tua and Herbert?
No. The Lawrence one where it was Trevor Lawrence and like Zach Wilson and Mac Jones, like that class. Like, that just didn't work out really at all.
Yeah, you're right.
But like this year's class, to your point, as you mentioned, Caleb Williams is starting week 1. Jaden Daniels is starting week 1. The number 1 and 2 overall pick, respectively. Number 3 pick, Drake May, is sitting behind Jacoby Brissett.
Yep.
And I think that's why you have Jacoby Brissett there in the first place.
You need a sacrificial lamb.
And that's exactly what he is. Is because you have a veteran in place that can, you know, lead an offense, but obviously not at a very high level. And the Patriots have issues offensively.
Yeah, like especially all over the place. If you're a team that does not see yourself as like a legitimate playoff contender right now, which, you know, when you drafted number 2 over in the draft or number 3 in the draft, you shouldn't. The Commanders shouldn't see themselves as a playoff contender right now.
No.
Everything else out first.
Michael Penix is a backup starting as the number 8th overall
pick. And I don't give
Atlanta.
Them credit, though, because they just are in a situation where they have to start Kirk Cousins.
I'm just reviewing what happened with the top 12 picks. Right. J.J. McCarthy starting the season on injured reserve. Right. And then Bo Nix is starting for the Broncos against Seattle. So you're going to have 3 guys out of those 6 start week 1. And we'll see what happens. But as far as the other guys, you're going to have 2 that start out as backups and then 1 start on the injured reserve.
Yeah, I mean, that's not to say, like, starting guys week 1, suddenly, like, that you don't give them, like, they don't have a chance to succeed. There are obviously examples of quarterbacks who started week 1 of their rookie season and have had a lot of success. But
I think
you're not doing them any favors.
I agree with you 100% that I think that the Patriots are doing Drake May a favor by sending him. And I said this with Mike. I think that, you know, as far as prospects, if you're looking at these guys like Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels won Heismans and, you know, you feel good about them potentially coming in and starting week 1, Drake May is a little bit more raw. Like, he's got plenty of potential and plenty of arm talent, but let him sit and don't just throw him out there behind that bad offensive line without any weapons on that Patriots offense and watch him suffer, lose his confidence early on. It just becomes a snowball effect, and then it ends up being that a wasted 3rd overall pick. So, yeah, I think they're doing him a favor.
You're asking guys to take an exam without ever taking the class, and I don't know if you've ever tried to do that. Not going to go well. But all right, one more break, and then we'll be closing it out here on Sports Talk. Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, taking you up till 7 p.m. Stick around. All right, closing it out here on WWL. Jeff Nowak filling in for Steve Geller. I want to thank everyone who makes this broadcast possible. Diane Newman, Dan Barron, Ian Hoke, Charlie Long behind the glass. We're going to be throwing it to the first edition of the Brian Kelly Show, getting ready for LSU football season. I'll be back here tomorrow night hosting Sports Talk with Steve Geller, 4 to 8 p.m. Who dat? Let's go.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.